We want to make processes really secure, no doubt, but it's no reason to freak out because of a new type of attack. It's more like, well, let's react to it and let's make it as secure as possible.
Hello and welcome to Identity Today, your go-to for what's what and all things security, digital identity and biometric tech. I'm your host, Blair Crawford. Today in the show, I'm joined by Anne-Catherine Freiberg, Business Development and Marketing Manager at BioID. The topic of focus today is understanding deepfakes and the implications for identity verification. Really hope you enjoy the chat.
I think it might be worthwhile to take 1 minute to discuss security.
Welcome to the show, Anne-Catherine. It's great to have you on.
Hi, Blair. Nice to be here.
So before we get stuck into the topics today, why don't you introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do.
Sure. Thanks. So my name is Anne-Catherine Freiberg, and I'm from Germany. I work at the company BioID. I started my career at Fraunhofer Institute and went into technology marketing a few years ago. And I'm now in business development at BioID and work in the biometrics industry. And I'm really happy to be here today to talk about the topic deepfakes and identity verification.
So before we get into understanding deepfakes and the implications for identity verification, tell us a little bit more about what BioID does.
Yeah, BioID develops software for facial recognition and authentication. And we're especially in the topic of liveness detection, meaning fraud prevention for any remote processes. And that one of them is identity verification, of course. So we work with lots of different companies around the world and secure their identity verification processes.
So there's been a lot of talk in the media recently about the threat posed by deepfakes. And also, I suppose, coming with that, the security of biometrics generally. Mm-hmm. So what are the, you know, to your opinion and your experience, what are the biggest misconceptions or prejudices that you see vendors in this area trying to overcome?
Well, deepfakes, to start with, are just another type of video from a liveness detection point of view, so from a fraud prevention point of view. It's a video of someone who might look like you, but it's just another video. So the typical ways to prevent fraud, video replays in identity verification and biometrics would also work here. So that's the first thing. The other thing is that I think there's a lot of fear that companies make, and you know, there's a lot of fear in the communication that they want to create in order to, well, foster skepticism about online processes. But it's of course the task of companies, vendors, biometric vendors, and end solution providers to make identity verification really secure. And there's a lot of different steps to do so. But I think a very important misconception is that biometric automated systems are less secure than human interaction, because of course humans also make mistakes. For humans, it's also difficult to detect fraud and to detect deepfakes, for instance. And there are studies that show that there's something like a tiring effect if border control people control ID documents, and they're just used to having the same person in front of them, like the one on the ID. And then over time, they would just accept the person because they're used to it, of course. And that's what happens to humans. And that's something that doesn't happen to machines, for instance. So, but there's other issues for machines. With machines, I mean algorithms, like identity verification algorithms. So I think it's important to see the overall picture, that automation is probably the way to go because of digitization, because of COVID. We see that everything is going online. And we want to make processes really secure, no doubt, but no reason to, freak out because of a new type of attack. It's more like, well, let's react to it and let's make it as secure as possible.
We, and this is my word, not yours, but I keep using the word about biometric pretenders, because there are a lot of organizations which are jumping on the biometric bandwagon. And they're throwing the buzzword around about how biometrics is a silver bullet for security. And it's actually causing distraction in market, because as we know, security, there is no silver bullet for security, and security is about layers. So I think one of the things that, you know, me and our company Adultery, we're passionate about, and I think you share the same passion, is about how we bring, you know, legitimacy and professionalism to the biometric industry and stop the technology being used as a buzzword. I mean, how do you think we can help address that from your perspective?
Yeah, I think transparency definitely is one thing. We need to, as a vendor, as a technology provider, we just need to be honest and transparent with the way everything works. And as you said, biometrics is not the silver bullet. It's one way of authenticating an individual's identity. You know, we've been on the market for more than 20 years, and biometrics was a lot in that time. It was unknown. It was like the bad guys doing biometrics. And now it's, as you said, the silver bullet. So it's all about being transparent with what the technology is capable of and maybe what it's not capable of. And as you said, providing the different layers. And I think biometrics is the best way to actually connect a digital identity with the real, with the physical identity, because you can't share your face. You can't give it to someone else. You can't change it. And so something like a password can be a good combination with a face for multi-factor authentication, for instance. But for finally making sure that the user is in front of the camera, the user is the one you're interacting with, and it's the one that you want to interact with in the field of know your customer and so on, I think biometrics is the way to go.
I agree. Not because I'm biased, obviously.
Yeah.
So just digging in a little bit deeper to the attacks that can attack on biometric systems, and you spoke a lot about this in the at the conference you were at recently in the paper that was released. Remind me, what was that conference you spoke at again?
It was from the European Association for Biometrics.
So we'll link that into the details of this podcast so people can check it out. But what are the different types of attacks that we're likely to see on biometric systems that we need to account for?
Yeah, so there are actually two different levels of attacks, but BioID, I will start with the one that BioID has its focus on, because that's the liveness detection. Liveness detection is also called presentation attack detection, and this name actually says what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to prevent presentation attacks, so attacks presented to a sensor, like a camera, for instance. And those include things like videos presented to the camera, 3D masks, paper masks. There are, you can name it, there are so many different types of attacks that fraudsters would come up with. And those, of course, need to be prevented through the algorithm, because you want to make sure that the person is actually in front of the camera in that moment. There's an international standard for presentation attack detection. It's called ISO 37001. And this ISO standard is actually really important in our industry, and you can make sure that the companies are compliant with this standard. And it doesn't really name deepfakes as a type of attack, because as I just said in the beginning, deepfakes are just another type of video. So it doesn't matter if you present a video to a biometric system by presenting it to the camera, or if you present a deepfake video. So from our algorithm's point of view, we would reject it because we see it's a video, no matter if it's a deepfake manipulated one or if it's a normal real video. So that's what I meant in the beginning when I said deepfakes are just another type of video. But there's also another level of attack that you need to consider, especially if you have an end user application. So an identity verification process, for instance, for opening a bank account. So if you're the bank or if you're the identity provider and you have a full process, checking the ID authenticity, for instance, checking that the person on the ID is the same as the one in front of the camera and that the person is actually there, which is the liveness detection part. And if you have a full application like that, you also need to secure this application, for instance, from virtual camera attacks. You want to make sure that no one can inject a video into the application. Here again, it doesn't matter if it's a real video or a deep fake, because this would probably cause an issue if it's injected in the application. Because if it looks like you and it moves like you, then most systems or all systems would say this is you. And so you need to be sure that the application is secured. So those are two levels of attacks that both need to be considered for creating secure applications and for creating secure identity verification. And one of them, as I said, the liveness detection is the part that we take care of, but there's also another one. So we work closely with our partners to make sure that both layers are secured.
Yeah, I mean, certainly when we're working on the application layer security, from our perspective, becomes a priority because of the endpoints and making sure we don't leave ourselves open or our customers open to the types of attack which you've just described there. But I do find it surprising sometimes still that there are projects which are being released to market and they focus purely on the first type of attack, the presentation attack that you discussed, but there are not specifications necessarily detailed and the requirements around application security. And I think that's one of the major issues that we see from our perspective that definitely needs to be addressed to give the customer the overall protection. Is that, you know, over in Germany and the other global regions which you're working in, are you seeing that regularly as well? Are people focusing too much on liveness and not the end-to-end multiple layers of security?
Well, we as a liveness detection provider are, of course, happy if someone focuses on that part of the solution. But we see that attacks or deepfake attacks are coming up more and more. You know, deepfakes have been around for a few years, and I'm kind of happy that they are gaining more awareness now, or they are creating more awareness for the application level security, because to be honest, this injecting a video could have been a problem all the time, because if I have a real video of you and it's so easy to get one on social media, for instance, or from the podcast or video recording that we do now, then that would have been a problem also before deepfakes came up. So I think it's all about creating the awareness and yeah.
So have you seen attempted deepfake attacks with any of your customers?
Yeah, so we have, and especially this type of attack is especially growing to a certain extent. It's still at a level where the quality isn't very good, and of course the number of attacks is not very high. And what we normally see that is it's the application level that is attacked. So as I said, if it's a video that we see presented to a camera, then the liveness detection would catch a deepfake. But if the application hasn't gotten enough attention at that point and virtual camera attacks are easily possible, then that's where our customers would contact us and ask us about it. And then we explain the different types of attacks and how they can secure their application from these types.
So you, when someone calls you, what are the top tips that you give them outside, you know, the application security or something, but how do you help them mitigate it in near real time?
I think the best way is to use native apps. It's not so easy to inject a video into a native app. It's actually not really possible on iPhones, and I'm not sure about Android, but it's very much more difficult than to do it on Windows. So one thing is using native apps. And then many customers tell us, well, but we still need our web applications. And then what you can also do is that you blacklist the most common virtual cameras. This is an easy way, and it's definitely one that makes it more difficult for a standard fraudster, let's put it that way, to inject a video through a virtual camera. And then the other thing is that on an algorithm level, we could use something that's called challenge response. It's actually a patent that we have since 2004. It means that you would ask the user to perform a certain challenge. So this is part of an active liveness detection. And here the benefit is that pre-recorded videos don't have any chance, because if you ask the user to move their head up and then to the side, for instance, then you probably don't have a pre-recorded video or pre-recorded deepfake of the person that does exactly that movement, and we would analyze this. But this is optional, so our standard liveness detection doesn't require any challenges, but if you want to have like a higher level of security, then challenge response definitely is something that you can do.
In the prep call that we did as we were getting, you know, we're going through some of the details, getting ready for this, you talked about a projector being used in a spoofing attempt. What was that one again?
What we see is, or what we do is that we work very closely with our customers. And then, for instance, if they do testing, certification, or also if they are just in the productive systems, sometimes they see that one type of attack isn't caught as it should be. And that was a projector, for instance, about 2 years ago, I think. So we saw that the projectors presenting videos, we thought, well, it should be the same, like a video, of course, but projectors do something else, like beamers. And so we found out together that projectors probably is something that needs to get more attention. And what we did is that we have a lab here, of course, and we have a whole dedicated team that focuses on different types of attacks. And then we created our own data sets, and we have a whole bunch of beamers, which is really nice for our employees, because they can, of course, on the weekend, just lend one and then have their home cinema. But we have a whole bunch of beamers here, the different types that are on the market, really small ones, really big ones, and so on. And we made sure to optimize our algorithms for this type of attack. And that's what's ongoing, of course, because as I said, there's new types of attacks coming up, like the deepfake ones. Now we are also focusing on deepfakes, of course. So that's kind of our job, to always stay on top of the latest developments. Holograms are coming up, for instance. So far, they're not really good, but still, we need to look into it. And that's also what we do. So anytime we find out, oh, there's something we're not happy about the performance, we would, of course, retrain right away. We create our own data sets and make sure that our algorithm is really up to date concerning the latest types of attacks.
So what do you think the future of biometric technologies is going to look like?
Well, I think it's something that is closely connected to digitization, to automation, and that's just the way we're going. As I said in the introduction, due to COVID, due to digitization generally, everything is moving online, and we really want to make sure that we know whom we interact with online. I think you know the cartoon on the internet, "No one knows you're a dog." And I think this cartoon is really old. I'm not sure, maybe 10 years or 15 or something, but it's still valid. It's really, really valid because you just need to make sure that you know whom you interact with. And that's where we're working it, right? Daltrey is, and BioID is. And so that's probably where we're going.
I think we'll have to link that into the blurb for the podcast as well, the video that you're talking about. I don't think I know what you're talking about, actually.
It's a cartoon. It's just a picture. You don't? Okay, maybe I'm too nerdy at some points. I'm sorry.
I'm going to check it out. I'm going to check it out, and then I'm going to link it. I think that's another one for people to have a look at. Maybe I've just missed it. So in terms of the end game then for biometrics and liveness technology, I mean, there probably isn't a real end game, but what is your view on it, I suppose, personally and professionally, given you work for BioID? What do you think is going to happen with adoption and liveness generally?
I think there's no end game, as you said. I think it's like a cat and mouse game more. There's always new ways to spoof systems, and it's our task to make it as unlikely as possible and as difficult as possible. And then the fraudsters would come up with new ways to create attack vectors. So it's more like a game between between the fraudsters and non-fraudsters, the good ones and the bad ones, you can put it that way. And it's really important to just stay on top of everything. So ongoing development is one thing. I think you cannot buy a solution and then think it would work for the next year. We, for instance, update every 4 to 6 weeks. That means we have new releases with new types of attacks and more data and so on in our algorithms every 4 to 6 weeks. I think it's super important. Instead of just buying, I think a few years ago, could have bought a biometric technology and then thought you could use it for 5 years, but that's just not what's going on. You really need to make sure you get regular updates. You need to have a team that's dedicated and just works on optimizing the performance and the fraud prevention. And I think that's really, really important. So no end game, I think.
Thank you very much for your time. It's been fantastic to chat with you, and I'm sure we'll speak to you again on the podcast again soon.
Thank you, Blair. It was really nice, and I hope everyone enjoyed the content and thought it was interesting. Thank you again.
That's all we have time for this week on Identity Today with me, Blair Crawford. I'd like to say a big thank you to our guest, Anne Catherine, as well as a big thank you to you, our listeners. If you want to know more about what we do at Daltrey, go to daltrey.com.